Hello, and welcome to Korean Context. My name is Nicholas Hamasevich, PhD student in world politics at the Catholic University of America, and I will be your guest host today. In this episode, we talk with author Adam Makos about his new book, Devotion. This book is about friendship and heroism during the Korean War of the U.S. Navy's first African-American naval fighter pilot, Jesse Brown, and Tom Hudner, who risked his life to save him. We also discussed the Marines on the ground they were trying to save, how Adam came across these stories and tried to tell it in his book, and the 2013 trip he took with Tom Hudner back to North Korea. Adam Makos, thank you for joining us here on Korean Context. Congratulations on your new book, Devotion, an epic story of heroism, friendship, and sacrifice.
Thanks so much, Nick. It's great to be hosted by you.
For our listeners, how would you kind of describe and set the scene for us for your book as people kind of look into it and buy it and start reading it?
Well, it's an incredible story of friendship, and it's a forgotten story. In the darkest hours of the Korean War, December 4th, 1950, the Navy's first African-American fighter pilot was shot down behind enemy lines. He crashed on a North Korean mountainside. And what happened next had never been attempted before. It had never been attempted since. His wingman, Tom Hudner, intentionally crash-landed to go down there on the ground to save his friend. And so it's a story of an incredible act, incredible heroism, and ultimately incredible devotion between men and to their country.
There's a great scene at the beginning of the book where you introduce yourself to Tom Hudner. What drew you to him? Did you hear a version of this story kind of before you actually met him?
I did. I had heard it. It's a legend in military circles, and it almost sounds like a tall tale. A fighter pilot who crash-landed his fighter plane, a perfectly good airplane, on the side of a mountain next to his friend to get out and launch an audacious one-man rescue mission. It just sounded like a tall tale. But Tom wore the Medal of Honor, and that told me something. It told me that this is real. And it told me a lot about him as well. What kind of man risks his life to save a friend? You have to be a special kind of person to put your life on the line. So I knew Tom was a good guy, a real Captain America, before I met him. But when I crossed the hotel lobby that day and asked for his business card and asked to interview him, I was never aware that I had just walked into one of the greatest stories of all humankind.
So how did you first hear about Jesse Brown? Was it through Tom Hudner and his story? Or did you've done a lot of military work and military history. Did you know a little bit about Jesse Brown's story?
I think Jesse's largely forgotten. He's a pioneer like a Joe Lewis, like a Jackie Robinson. And yet, because he gave his life in the Korean War, he's been forgotten since. Had he lived, he might have been the first African-American admiral. He might have run for Senate. He might have went on to do great things. But his part in history was largely forgotten because he fought in the Forgotten War and because he died in that war. So when I met Tom, I was intrigued to learn his story, but I was equally, if not more, intrigued to learn who was Jesse Brown.
You kind of hinted in the book that it was supposed to be kind of a magazine article originally. When did you realize, hey, I have a book here, or this is bigger than the magazine? I need to do something more.
I think I realized that when I started to learn about the battle that these two men fought in. I knew their friendship was beautiful, but you can't fill 400 pages of a friendship. When I learned about the Chosin Reservoir battle, I realized, how can we, as Americans in particular, how can we ignore this battle? It was as harrowing as the Battle of the Bulge. It was as harrowing as Valley Forge. It was fought in the far reaches of North Korea when approximately 10,000 Marines at one time are surrounded by 100,000 Chinese Communist troops. This is like the Alamo on steroids, fought in the bitter cold. And it ends in such a heroic survival story. We almost lost a Marine division, but the triumph of the American spirit, they turned defeat into victory. And yet we forgot it. So when I learned about the Chosin, I said, this is a story that needs to be told, not just these two men, but the story of all these men.
The story kind of evolves around Tom Hudner and Jesse Brown, but you had a lot of other people in here that have amazing stories as well. And so how did you figure out how to weave those stories into this larger story that you wanted to tell?
There was a wonderful common thread, and that is the title, Devotion. we follow Jesse's young wife, Daisy, who is a young military wife, faced with this very difficult new role for her because she was from Mississippi. She had never left her home state. She had a young daughter, 2 years old, and suddenly she's asked to see her young husband off to war. And Jesse could have stayed home. He could have said, no, I'm not going. One of the other pilots in his squadron had said, oh, I don't want to kill people. I didn't sign on for this. And he was allowed to leave the Navy. So Jesse didn't have to go to Korea, and he was lucky. He had a wife like Daisy who said, you have to serve your country. This was your dream, and I'm going to stand by you. So you have beautiful people like Daisy, and we follow the Marines on the ground. And it was just happenstance to find men whose lives paralleled Tom and Jesse's. There's always a danger when you put too many pieces in a story. You know, will it come together into a common whole? And in this case, we lucked out. The story has one spirit, and it's the spirit of the young Americans who fought the first year of the Korean War.
You talked about how, in your meeting with Tom Hunter, that you're a little nervous because a lot of the other previous work had been on World War II, and this was the Korean War. What about that World War II versus Korean War made you nervous? As you worked through it, and as now you have the book out, what are some of those similarities and differences between World War II and the Korean War that our listeners and readers should know about?
Well, I was very hesitant, Nick, and it was partially because all I had to go by was MASH. I mean, we've all seen MASH. It's filmed in sunny Southern California, and you have Hawkeye, the doctor, fixing people. And that's pretty much what represented the Korean War for probably most of us. So I didn't know where the battle lines were. I didn't know the timelines. I didn't even know who we were really fighting. I thought, oh, we're fighting the North Koreans. I didn't realize that the Chinese People's Liberation Army committed hundreds and hundreds of thousands of troops, full armies, to fight us. I didn't realize that we were fighting the Soviet Union behind the lines, Russian pilots flying Russian jets, pretending they were Chinese. So our fighter pilots are fighting the Russians. Our Marines on the ground are fighting the Chinese. We're all fighting the North Koreans. It was an eye-opening experience. And then I came to realize this was fought by sometimes the same men who fought World War II. So they're wearing the same uniforms. They're shooting the same guns. The planes are carrying the same bombs. And then it struck me, these are all the members of the Greatest Generation, the guys who made World War II, the guys who just missed World War II. And when I realized the Greatest Generation actually fought two wars, it was just a slap upside the head. I realized, why can we celebrate one war and forget another? You know, as a country, we're better than this. We don't forget our veterans. We can't forget a war, especially not when it's this significant.
With one of the main characters being Jesse Brown, the first African-American naval pilot, during that time, there's still a lot of racism. And you describe some very tough and painful moments of racism that Jesse and his family faced. As someone who's written a lot about another tough subject of death, war and life, and there are some tough scenes of death in this book too, how difficult is it to write about death and racism? And how do you try to go about describing these painful and emotional moments? And are there any similarities on how you try and handle that?
Well, the one good thing about this story is you could write a whole book about the racial insults that Jesse suffered and Daisy suffered and the young, you know, his brother suffered in the South. This is a very redemptive story. So we show the racism he lived through in the South, and then we show how it changed when he wore the uniform of the U.S. Navy, how when he went aboard that carrier, they became a band of brothers. So whether you were a mechanic on the flight deck, whether you were captain of the ship, whether you were a fellow pilot, these men stopped seeing the color of each other's skin, and they went to battle because they believed their nation was in danger, and they worked together. They fought together. And I think there's a great lesson there. It's like a football team. You don't see racism on the defensive line of the Washington Redskins or of the Denver Broncos. We as Americans, when we band together, a beautiful thing happens. And that's what happened in the Korean War. Now, death as a subject, I think that's the reason people didn't write this book before me. They looked at Jesse Brown's life and they said, what an incredible life. What a pioneer. Oh, Tom Hunter tried to save him. And, you know, as we'll explain, he was unsuccessful and Jesse gave his life for his country. You say, oh, it's a tragedy. Well, there's sometimes beauty in a tragedy. you can find how, in the case of Jesse, he shaped everyone who knew him. He helped Daisy grow up from being that meek little lamb, as she called herself, to becoming a military wife, and then a widow who was able to carry on without him. He helped Tom Hudner change who he was and find his true self. And he saved countless lives on the ground. And so by focusing on the good things, how he shaped everyone around him, and how his legacy didn't die that day, you can find beauty. This is a beautiful story. Life doesn't always end with a wedding and a choreographed dance like at the end of every movie. Life ends with tragedy, but at the same time, what we do in life means so much.
This story kind of continues in a little bit because in 2013, you got to go to North Korea with Tom Hudner to try and find that crash site. How did that trip come about, or what was the impetus behind it?
Well, that trip was born that day in December 1950 when Jesse died on the mountainside. Tom tried to pull Jesse out of the wreckage of his plane, but he was helplessly pinned in there by his leg. He couldn't get out. And so before Tom left the crash site, he took Jesse's last words. Jesse said, "Tell my wife, Daisy, how much I love her." Tom said, "I'll do that." And Jesse eventually succumbed to his injuries. Now, before Tom left, he shouted at his unconscious, perhaps deceased friend, and he said, "Jesse, we don't have the tools to get you out of here, but we'll come back for you. Someday we'll come back." And Tom had every intention of keeping that promise back in 1950-51. Nobody saw us being driven out of North Korea like we were. So in 2013, I was writing the book, and I said to Tom, when I got to that part, I said, I called him up. I said, "Did you ever get to keep that promise of yours?" He said, "No, nobody goes to North Korea. You can't go there." I said, "Well, if we can get you there, would you go?" He said, "In a heartbeat." And so at age 89, as they say, he was rather frail. He was, he's an older gentleman.
Right.
He flew to Beijing. He flew into North Korea, and I accompanied him. And he sat down with the Korean People's Army across from three senior colonels. And he said, "Due to the relations, we can't look for Jesse Brown, because Jesse Brown's body is still in the wreckage of his Corsair on that North Korean mountain." He said, "Will you look for him? Will you do this as a humanitarian gesture?" And it was quite amazing, and I believe they were sincere. The North Korean officer said, "Kim Jong-un, our supreme leader, has authorized us to begin the search for Jesse Brown and other MIAs. We have nearly 7,000 American MIAs still missing from the Korean War, still in North Korea." And I felt, seeing the North Korean officer, seeing the sincerity in their eyes, they're terribly concerned that industrial progress, the weather, erosion of the hillsides, time is erasing our soldiers' bones. And they have a deep respect in their culture for their elders and for their warriors. And the way they treated Tom showed me that they have a deep respect for our military and for him. They treated him like a general of their own army, the way they chauffeured him around, the way they saluted him, the way they toasted him. There was great sincerity there, and I do believe that they want to get that MIA return going again. So for now, we're left to simply trust and wait.
Were you guys supposed to go to the crash site? I mean, there were stories and news reports that North Koreans are telling you, "Oh, it's monsoon season, so we can't go there now." So was it supposed to be you guys, or was it supposed to be North Koreans to go there and then kind of report back to you while you were still in North?
We were supposed to go ourselves. Tom had brought all of his camping gear. We had all brought camping gear. We brought solar cell phone chargers. We were ready for 2 weeks, 10 days in the North Korean wilderness. And when we flew in there, Mother Nature struck. And we could see from the plane on the way into the capital, the rivers were swollen and muddy. The roads were washing away. They got hit by the monsoons. And we saw it because they said, "Well, we can't get to the Chosen." So we held these meetings, we held these formal discussions. And then they said, "We're going to just show you the best of our country." And so we went on the roads into the mountains, and I saw that we would have never made it across the country because bridges were buckling, roads were being washed away, the monsoons were tragic. So Tom sort of accomplished his mission, but the lesson was, tried in December 1950 to bring his friend home. He tried in July 2013, and to this day, tries anything he can to raise awareness to Jesse's story.
You dedicate the book to the veterans of the forgotten victory in Korea, 1950-1953. Usually the Korean War is seen as a tie or a stalemate, as the armistice and the DMZ are sometimes the only things that are keeping the two sides from continuing to fight each other. Why did you dedicate the book and say it in that way?
Well, when we look at the time America entered the war, you know, the North Koreans were halfway through the southern part of the country, and we were eventually squeezed all the way down to the Pusan perimeter. They were a week away from a defeat, a clear-cut defeat, an entirely red Korean peninsula, and maybe Japan would have been next to fall. Instead, the landing at Incheon, the army stand down at Pusan, the Air Force coming over from Japan, we turned a certain defeat, and we drove the enemy back to their own border. And then, yeah, we settled for the 38th parallel. But then, at the end of the day, 50 million South Koreans today live in freedom. They live in under democracy. And 37,000 Americans gave their lives. When you start to think about 37,000, we say, oh, well, it's World War II was 400,000. Okay, so this wasn't that much. Think about 37,000 people. Put 37,000 flags on a lawn and see how many football fields it stretches. That's a pretty hefty price to pay. And to call it anything but a victory is short-sighted. Yeah, we ended at the same place where we began, but all these people, you know, all our boys gave their lives for something. And other people get to enjoy freedom and prosperity today. As they say, you know, we gave our tomorrows for your today. That's what happened. When you look at South Korea, when you've been there and you've seen their skyscrapers and you've seen the vibrancy of their cities, and you drive their cars, you can't call it anything but a victory.
You've written some incredible stories in this book. When I read this book, it's almost like you don't believe it, right? But then you read the whole story and you've done so well kind of putting it all together that in some ways the story had to turn out this way, right? Everything that happened in Tom Hunter's life leading up to this moment and everything in Jesse Brown's life leading up to this moment almost seemed like, and even the other characters, Red Parkinson and all the other guys you talk about, those actions, that's what they were supposed to do. Having been around so many of these heroes, how do you try to process these actions and emotions and how thinking about, man, I can't believe this happened versus this did happen. And yeah, these guys, that's exactly what this guy would do. If you could talk to this guy for 20 minutes, you know that that's exactly what this guy would do.
Well, there's an element I like to believe, I almost have to believe anymore, there's an element of fate in this and destiny, and that some stories are meant to be told, and they're meant to be told at a specific time. I think our country needs this story now more than ever in 2015. And it was amazing as we worked on it. There are incredible stories. Now, we focus on two Marines. It's two Marines out of 10,000. But we found two guys with incredible stories who watched Tom and Jesse fly. We found people would come to us. One was a medic named Haley. And Haley said, oh, hey, let me tell you, I once had lunch with the first African-American pilot on the beach in Cannes. What was his name? I said, my God, I'm writing a book about him. His name's Jesse Brown. He said, yeah, that's the guy. Let me tell you my story about the time we had lunch together.
That's a great story, too, in the book.
Oh, so, yeah.
The readers will love that story.
When Elizabeth Taylor surprises them and buys a bottle of wine, that essentially she gives it to Jesse Brown. And so the young movie starlet of the times mixes with the Navy's black pioneer. It sounds like a Hollywood screenwriter writes this. Another sailor came to us and he said, the day Jesse Brown died, the ship's captain announced his death to the crew. I had my camera right next to me. And he said, I want to send you that photo. And he sent us this incredible photo. And you see all these white sailors crowding around the bunk room intercom. And their heads are all bowed. And you can feel the sorrow. And he said, this photo should be in your book. And so all these little serendipitous pieces came together that filled in the gaps, and it shine light on the forgotten moments. And we're able to tell the story of the lives of these men as if it was yesterday. And a lot of that's hard work. A lot of that's the result of 7 years of work on this book. But some of it is just, it feels like the hand of fate.
I first heard you on the Art of Manliness podcast, talking about your previous book on World War II, A Higher Call, about a German fighter pilot who didn't shoot down a severely damaged U.S. bomber, but instead escorted it out of German airspace. And you and the host, Brett McKay, were talking about if today we would have similar courage and fortitude as these people you write about, not just in A Higher Call, but also here in Devotion. Is this a question that we as readers should be asking ourselves? Could I do this? Is that a question you want the readers to be asking themselves as they read your book?
It's funny. I have an analogy for what Tom did. And it was when he crash landed to save Jesse Brown, it was akin to if you and I were driving and you're going over an icy bridge in wintertime and you're in the car ahead of me. Suddenly your car goes off the bridge and you're in the icy water and it's filling up your car. And I'm watching you, Nick. You're about to drown. Am I the kind of person who's going to pick up the phone and call 911 and watch you die, as all those pilots were doing that day? They were watching the smoke rise from Jesse's plane. Or am I going to drive my car off the bridge into the icy water and get out and swim over to try to save you? That's what Tom Hudner did. Now, we don't ask anybody to take those kind of risks, but I think it's a lesson really in unselfishness. When Tom came back to his carrier, Tom thought he was going to be court-martialed for ruining a perfectly good airplane. Instead, the captain said, "I'm proud of you for what you tried to do for our shipmate." And the captain had already put out a press release to the United States that said, "There has been no finer act of unselfish heroism in military history." And that word just keeps coming back, unselfish, unselfish. And I think our world today, we as young people of all ages, we're the Facebook generation, and we're taught to be selfish. Post cool photos, get likes, amass friends, build your brand, get somewhere in the world. And you watch these young men who went over to fight and die in the Korean War, who gave their lives and they rest in North Korean soil to this day. Talk about unselfishness. Tom Hudner's act of bravery. Talk about unselfishness. Daisy Brown letting her husband go to war and then trying to raise a 2-year-old daughter by herself and using the money that she got from Jesse's death to care for her daughter until that day came when Tom Hudner put her through college himself. There's so much unselfishness swirling around in this story that's the lesson we can all take from it. And we can look around and we could say, how do I talk to my coworker? You know, did I call my mom on her birthday? What nice thing can I do for my neighbor? You know, we can learn little things from this story and apply them to every day of our lives.
The book is Devotion, an epic story of heroism, friendship, and sacrifice by Adam Makos. Adam, thanks so much for joining us on Korean Context. Thanks for writing this book. Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
Well, thank you, Nick, and thanks for all the fine work you guys do. This is a very important mission you serve.
Thank you for listening to the Korean Context podcast. We hope you will join Korean Context again next time.